I'm at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, and who should stop by the booth? And so I had to give her a copy of Attack of the Killer Asparagus, but Dr. Mae Barenbaum from the University of Illinois, entomologist and friend of pollinators everywhere. Yeah, just got your thumbs up here. It's great to see you.
Oh, a pleasure, and thanks for the book. I really look forward to reading it, my lucky day.
Well, I'm happy to give it to you because I'm going to ask you to talk to me about the state of bees and pollinators in 2015 at the end of March. You say there's actually some good news.
Some good news from for the honey producers. Honey yields are up for the first time in many years. There are, I think, 4% more colonies than there were last year at this time. So we're creeping back.
I saw a chart, and it's, I'm sure you've seen it too, and I was kind of surprised by it, that charts honeybee populations from 1945, and that's actually when they began their decline to the present. Is that significant in any way? Does that mean anything?
There are so many social and cultural changes starting in 1947, which is when the National Agricultural Statistics Service started censusing the number of hives. Profound changes in urbanization and you know, creation of the suburbs, and changes in land use, and changes in American diet that weren't particularly bee friendly. So it's hard to pinpoint any single factor, but a lot of changes did take place. And there was we have far fewer than half the number that we had in 1947 when the statistics National Ag Statistics Service started counting beekeepers.
Well, why is that significant? Does it mean anything? Because we have more people, I assume. We have to feed more people. We have fewer bees. What does that mean?
Well, the whole farm sector is changing. You know, back at the turn of the 21st century, the 20th century, something on the order of 20% of Americans lived on farm. Now it's way less than 2%.
Yeah.
So in general, there's just been a shift in how and where Americans live. So I think bees are part of that shift. So in that we are still depending on one species for managed pollination doesn't speak very well to our recognition of the importance of pollination services.
Well, that's a really good point. One of the things I've talked about on my show recently is the almond crop in California. And from what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong, approximately 60% of our honeybees go out to California every February to pollinate the almond crop. Now, is that dangerous in any way in terms of having all the bees in one place where a catastrophe could happen? And B, is it dangerous in that that's all they're consuming for this time that they're out there?
It's not optimal for so many reasons. As you say, the one reason that colony collapse disorder got so much attention is that, so the first reports came in fall 2006, but in February 2007, there were about 600,000 acres of almonds, and the growers were afraid there wouldn't be enough bees to pollinate them. So that's what propelled this story to the front, to the New York Times, because at the time it was, I think, a $2.5 billion industry. It's now something in the order of a $3.5 billion industry.
Yeah.
Every almond depends on the pollination services of a honeybee, and that's not a stable thing. I mean, if you had an investment portfolio, you wouldn't invest everything in one stock. So what we're doing is investing the only sort of commercially viable pollination service we are investing in is honeybees. And if something happens to them, we don't have many options. And there are 90-plus crops in the U.S. that depend on that one species.
Well, is it even possible to have the almonds pollinated with native pollinators?
There are pollinators, the other solitary bees, that are actually better at almond pollination than honeybees are. Almonds are not an optimal crop for honeybees. And as you point out, if you see what almond orchards look like, there is nothing else around. So a steady diet of any one thing, bees are gleaners like we are. They are designed to consume a diversity of crops. They here in Illinois, they're out in May, they forage through October. Of course, they're going to be visiting many, many different kinds of flowers. So they're not really built in an evolutionary sense to deal with one crop at a time, which is what migratory beekeeping depends on. So we're kind of going against their biology, and you know, they've had millions of years to perfect this, and we're kind of undermining it.
All right, what about pesticides? You and I have talked before, and you have said that pesticides are playing some role in bee decline and bee loss. It's hard to figure out or quantify exactly what that is because bees have so many other threats, have so many other problems to deal with, like being shipped out to California, like varroa mite, like fungal diseases. Where are we in 2015 with pesticide use?
Well, we know a lot more. I mean, that's been really transformative. Up until colony collapse, sort of, people didn't really even know how bees managed, how they processed pesticides. When the honeybee genome sequence was published in 2006, one of the really startling findings is that honeybees have only 1/3 to 1/2 the number of detoxification genes that other insects do. So they're not particularly well equipped to deal with synthetic organic pesticides. And what we've done when we in managing bees for agricultural pollination is expose them not just to pesticides, many different kinds of pesticides at the same time. So they interfere with each other. Fungicides, for example, can synergize or potentiate insecticides. So we treat seeds not just with neonics, for example, but with fungicides as well, and they interact. So it's not just pesticides, it's how pesticides are being used. And honeybees, by the way, are, you mentioned these other scourges, including Nosema, which is a fungal disease, and the parasite varroa mites, and how do beekeepers treat them? With pesticides. Uh-huh. So bees can't escape them. They're home in their homes. The pesticides are being applied directly in beehives to control varroa mites and other pathogens and parasites. So here you have a system that is not equipped to deal with all kinds of poisons, and they not only have to deal with all the different phytochemicals that they encounter in nectars and pollens, but also in their own home. There are agricultural pesticides, there are beekeeper-applied pesticides. It's like not the world they are accustomed to.
Well, that sounds like a recipe for disaster, yet you say bee populations are going up a little bit.
Well, part of that is because our awareness has been raised. The almond industry, much to its credit, is partnering with a lot of bee-centric organizations to diversify plantings around orchards so that bees have supplementary sources. Fundamental to dealing with all these stresses is good nutrition, just like with humans.
Right.
So hungry bees or starving bees are going to succumb more quickly to effects of pesticides, pathogens, parasites, and everything. So I think the top priority and probably the easiest one technologically to achieve is to give them more different things to eat. And that's just win-win all around, because here we are at the garden show, you know? There are flowers galore. We like to look at them. Bees like to eat their nectar and pollen. How can you lose? Let's diversify the landscape.
That's Dr. Mae Barenbaum from University of Illinois. You mentioned the flower show. What is that weird thing about being here looking at flowers at the flower show?
Well, whenever I look at a flower, I'm used to looking for the insects that are visiting, and here we are indoors at Navy Pier in March, and there's no insects. It just seems unnatural to me.
You know, a lot of people, if they saw insects,
they would reach
for the spray can.
Yes, they would, which is a shame, because their flower's best friend is a bee.
Yeah. All right, before I let you go, one last thing. You mentioned that there's a new class of chemical that the EPA is looking at, and you also talked about what the Obama administration is doing and how it's been a particularly bee-friendly administration.
Yes, absolutely. The last June, President Obama issued an executive order that requires all federal agencies to examine their land use in order to make federal land more insect or pollinator friendly. And that's millions and millions of acres, even federal highway rights of way, national parks, all kinds of, in one fell swoop, we have federal agencies looking to diversify their landscapes. So to paraphrase President Obama, that's change I can believe in.
Well, what about this new class of pesticides?
The sulfoxaflores, yeah, they're a lot like the neonics, and there's a lot of concern about them. And what we were saying earlier, it's not so much the chemicals themselves, but how they are used. Because what's going to happen if you ban any particular chemical class, there will be another class to come along, or an older version of a chemical.
Which might be actually worse.
Even worse. So, yeah. So before people talk about bans, they have to consider what will be used in place of whatever's eliminated. So a lot of these old chemistries are still around, and they're not off the market. So what has to be done is to develop pest and weed management practices that aren't so chemically reliant. The same thing with putting all your eggs in the pollinator basket. We put all our pest management eggs in a chemical control basket, and there are all kinds of tools for managing pests that are a little more environmentally sustainable.
You must be looking with interest at the ban on neonicotinoids in the EU.
Yeah, funny you should say that, because at the same time our honey yields are up and our numbers of colonies are up, France's are down. And France was one of the EU nations that banned two of the three, but on only certain crops. Uh-huh. Now the problem is, it's so variable year to year, largely because of climate, it's going to be impossible to tell what effect that ban has.
You have no control. I mean,
none.
You know, as a scientist, you
right.
want a control
none.
Factor, but you
right.
don't have a control.
So everyone will find evidence for his or her particular pet hypothesis.
Well, Dr. May Barenbaum, University of Illinois, entomologist, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy Attack
of
the Killers.
I can't wait to read it. Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks.